So I've just parked up in an industrial unit in Peckham in South London, and I'm here to meet Ian Davenport, one of the YBA generation. He graduated from a college near here, Goldsmiths, in 1988, and within 3 years, he was nominated for the Turner Prize. He's always made abstract paintings, but he continues to explore colour relationships, chance, and the physicality of paint, so I can't wait to see what he's got in store for us today. Oh, hello, Ian.
Nice to see you. How are you doing?
From Christea Roberts Gallery, this is Making a Mark, a podcast series exploring artists' approaches to drawing and printmaking.
Let's go through.
I'm Charlotte Mullins.
When we go to the studio on the right, you'll see there's a piece which is kind of made by lying paper on the floor.
Ian's studio is hidden from view, tucked between two residential streets in a former Victorian laundry. There are finished paintings propped against the walls, panels he's about to work on, and a number of prints and works on paper that he's completing for his new exhibition Pathway at Christea Roberts Gallery.
This is like a turquoise ground, but then it's like a sun erupting at the bottom. Almost the paint has blended into marbling at the bottom.
Yeah, it's quite lovely.
Like you melted it.
So I think
Ian Davenport is known today for his paintings and prints of stripes that oscillate and shimmer before your eyes. He's been exploring the possibilities of the poured vertical line for many years, working like an alchemist on new colourways and pouring widths, revelling in unexpected discoveries, like when paint from the stripes would swirl and mingle as it pooled on the studio floor.
I wasn't expecting them to be this big.
I think if you're looking at artworks with colour, scale is important.
You need to kind of envelop you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always think of your piece under Southwark Bridge, which is Poured Lines from 2006, where you walk along it and the colour kind of dances or pulses along with you like a beat of music.
Yeah.
I mean, that's maybe 100 foot long?
It's 150 foot long, yeah.
Ian loves pushing scale. He's made a number of small and medium-sized prints and etchings, but some of his etchings have been enormous. I'm David Cleeton Roberts. I'm director and partner at Christea Roberts Gallery. He's made a huge piece called Prismatic Diptych, which is probably one of the biggest etchings we've ever published. And just in terms of technique, they were incredibly challenging. They took up a whole team, a whole print studio for months and months and months to get right. Because if you can imagine the way an etching is made, with every single line being individually inked and then printed, then allowed to dry before the next line is done, the amount of work and time that goes into making the etchings, Ian often says it's more laborious than making a painting.
Like 3-4 tables full of paint in various size industrial...
Just trying to have a tidy up, hence the sort of boiler suits and, yeah.
Dotted around the room are tables covered in hundreds of paint pots, filled with every colour imaginable. Ian uses Liquitex paint, a specially formulated acrylic that can be applied in pools of colour that doesn't craze or wrinkle when it dries.
So it means you can paint incredibly thick puddle areas of paint. There's a painting over here, for example, which is maybe a week or so old, and you can feel the bottom of it's still kind of clammy. If you put your hand on there, you can feel it actually still feels a bit damp.
Oh, if you put it like that.
But over a period of years, that will just dry and dry and dry and become harder and harder.
But I remember the first stripe print you did, and there was just the tiniest bit of pooling at the bottom, almost kind of incidental to the thing. And then as you've worked with it in paintings and in prints, you've...
That element sort of taken on a whole area of itself and become more and more exaggerated, you're right. And I mean, it's even starting to take over spaces. You know, I think that's the interesting thing. If you work on a particular language and, you know, you kind of create certain sort of limitations for yourself, often you get quite unusual, you come up with quite unusual solutions.
In Davenport's stripe paintings and prints, he selects pinks and blues and greens that seem to beat against each other in a percussive way. Which is interesting, given the fact that Ian is a drummer in a band and has not one, but two drum kits in the studio.
One is supposed to be the quiet electronic drum kit, and then I've got a very lovely, big, very loud drum kit. From being a kid, I was very interested in music and playing musical instruments like guitar and drums and things like that. And I think that the paintings have, you know, this very musical element to them. There's rhythm, there's a lot of timing. You know, they are paintings or prints that a drummer or a musician kind of makes. There's so much about sort of notation and have this sort of strict kind of rhythm that runs through them.
I am Jonathan Watkins, and I'm an independent curator and writer. There certainly is an interest in rhythm in Ian's work. But then at the same time, there's that acceptance of chance and, you know, a kind of contrast between the control and then letting go. An acceptance of that is definitely through the influence of musicians like John Cage, who talked about the importance of chance and spontaneity and improvisation. So it's not like you're looking simply at something mechanical. You're looking at something which is taking you to places that you weren't expecting to go, in the same way that an improvised piece of music does.
How on earth did you get this pooling at the bottom? Because it's every colour, turquoise, pink, yellow.
So with this particular piece, the paint's come down and it's sort of formed a layer of liquid paint at the bottom. And then when the work's been finished, I've sort of pushed that back up. And it creates this sort of very beautiful line between the striped area and this more organic kind of puddled area. And you get these beautiful ridges and details as the two sort of things meet. And I really like this juxtaposition between the organic sections and then this much more structured area. Visually, it's basically like looking at kind of ice cream, I think. You know, it's like a big, big load of ice creams melted down a wall and then pulled at the bottom. And if you can sort of envisage something like that, I think that's kind of pretty much what we get.
The thing about Ian Davenport's mark making is it's so varied. And of course, you know, his mark making is not happening with a paintbrush. You know, and right from the beginning, well, actually, that's not quite true. I mean, right from the beginning, it was, but, you know, paint brushes that were loaded with paint and then kind of slapped against the canvas and then the paint ran down. You know, so that was the sort of beginning of the drips that Ian's become so famous for. But then, I mean, he was using all kinds of things like electric, you know, ventilator fans or, you know, pins and nails and syringes and watering cans. I mean, it's sort of anything that he could get paint onto a canvas with, but without a paintbrush.
I remember the first time I saw you in your old studio, I think, you had a circle painting and you would tilt them and you had boards over it to pour from, and it was an incredibly physical way of painting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it still is very physical, but different processes, and often they're very simple. They're really sort of simple ways of sort of applying paint, like you say, and those, there was a circle of paint was poured, almost like a pancake, and then flipped upside down, the excess would drip off, and then I'd flip it back over, and the surface would then sort of just soften off and reform a very smooth layer. There's one over here. This is this is sort of the time that you're talking about.
When I first met him, he was using a lot of pouring to create these beautiful, very thickly textured paintings of arcs and circles, which he would literally pour onto the panels, let dry, and then pour a new layer on. So they were very different to the stripes that he's become very well known for now. But I suppose it's very distinctive because there's always a strong interest in process with Ian. The process of making the painting is as important as the work itself.
David Cleeton Roberts began working with Ian in 2001 when Ian made his first series of prints with the Cristea Roberts Gallery. Up until that point, Ian hadn't worked in printmaking, and figuring out how to translate his thick slicks of poured paint into prints was incredibly challenging. Every printmaking technique he considered was problematic because it was made using a press and lacked the tactility and three-dimensionality of his paintings. But then he hit upon screen printing.
So what we did was we introduced Ian to a wonderful silkscreen printer called Bob Setch, who'd worked with a lot of artists, including Patrick Caulfield, right through the 70s and 80s. And Bob and Ian together developed this technique where they'd literally build layers and layers and layers of silkscreen ink, much in the same way as Ian built his paintings, but just using silkscreen. So you would get this physicality on the surface. And if you were to run your finger over it, you would feel the ridges, the edges of the ink, which is counterintuitive to screen print, because screen print was designed to be a very flat medium. But what Ian and Bob did together was create it into almost a sculptural surface, which did absolutely reflect the paintings.
Nestled in tissue paper on a nearby table is a screen print from this first series called Ovals, which Ian takes me over to look at. It's far more restrained in colour than his later stripe works, much more minimal, with a black corona appearing around the edges of a poured white oval on a white ground.
And they're sort of made in this way of pouring and built up in layers. And they were made on glass, actually, so I kind of poured the layers onto glass. And then when the first layer was dry, I kind of put another sheet on top of that and poured the second layer on top so I could get the...
That was a way kind of making the screens.
They're very labour-intensive, actually. They're built up in a lot of layers of ink. So they, one of the things that I think Alan and David from the gallery were very concerned with was getting this build so that they kind of the prints actually were reminiscent of the paintings, which had these very thick layers of materiality.
Because I'm not sure I appreciated that before, but actually you can see really every drip that you from when you flipped the oval over to stop it too much paint seeping out, you can actually see the little drips from that, so you get the texture even though it's a print. I mean, it feels like
they're very physical. They're very physical things.
So the stripe works developed from a series of paintings where Ian was literally using a syringe to pour acrylic paint down a panel. And they started out majoritatively about the stripe itself. And then as the works developed, he began to tilt the panel at the bottom. So you got this wonderful pooling and swirling at the bottom. And as he was making these paintings, then the challenge was, how can these translate into print? We then suggested he look at etching, because etching gives you a very different surface. It's a slightly more tactile, slightly softer colour. But also with etching, you can get a more, you can use lots of different techniques. So it was etching that Ian first made the stripe pieces in. And really, he worked with a very different studio. He worked with an etching studio called Thumbprint, who he still works with now, to develop a whole different process to the silkscreen, because these etchings are incredibly complex. The way you make an etching generally is you need one plate per different colour, which when you look at one of Ian's stripe prints, you realise would be totally impossible, because some of them have 36, 37, up to 40 colours on, and it just wouldn't make any sense to have 40 printing plates. So Ian and the printer developed this technique where they could put every third stripe onto a separate plate, individually ink up every single stripe with a different colour, print it, let it dry, then take the second plate, do the same, and then the third plate, and so build the image stripe by stripe by stripe using only three plates.
For you, running a studio like this as assistants walking around, you are in charge here in this studio. You paint and work on paper studio. But when you work on prints, you are working with a whole other team of people under the control of a master printer. Is that strange as an artist to do that?
No, I think it's good. In fact, I really like it. I think, but it kind of requires everybody to go on a bit of a journey. And that can be, it can be challenging, especially if they're, deadlines and some of the materials are expensive and it's they're big things to manage and to work on. But, I really like it. I think, I've been very fortunate with the printers I work with. They generally are really up for a challenge and for sort of trying to make something really special. So, I've been very fortunate.
The colour really pops out of this one. It's neons.
Yeah, this is like trying to persuade the printer to use some sort of fluorescent colours. And you can see, you're starting to sort of layer it up. On white, it's a lot easier because the colours sit on white and they don't sink. And then as soon as you start introducing things like a sort of a ground like this, then obviously look how much more muted that's become.
Right, like ice cream colours.
Yeah, but it's also like the yellow starts to look like green. So,
Just because you put it on a blue ground.
Yeah, exactly.
Ian looks at colour in a very, very intuitive, and I say a very different way to other people. He understands colour. He understands what colour does. And so the complexity of Ian's compositions is quite subtle in a way, because you might look at a composition and say, yeah, I like it, and it works, but you wouldn't understand quite why that was working until you got into Ian's head and realised that every single dynamic between every single stripe is thought through.
Do Joseph Albers has had a strong influence on Ian's work, particularly his thoughts on colour, published in 1963. Albers stated that colour was the most relative medium in art, something that could be manipulated through the placing of other colours. He designed an influential Yale course that Davenport's own tutor, Michael Craig Martin, attended.
And the way you work is so different, yet you both have that innate understanding of what colour can do and how putting two colours next to each other, the way you place colour is incredibly important. Albers taught that. You and Michael both have that running through your work.
It's interesting because I worked with a gallery, well, my gallery in London, Waddington Galleries. I think it was about the mid-90s. Leslie Waddington started to represent the Albers estate. So I started to see a lot of his famous homage to the square paintings in the gallery. And, you know, because I was sort of coming across them quite frequently, I started to really become aware of the way that he was playing around with these sort of colour combinations and making these and just all the amazing things that he could do with it and just all the different effects that he was able to create. And also the print gallery, Christelle Roberts Gallery, started to show Albers prints at the same time. And it was fascinating to see the way that he did that. And it's sort of like there's a formal element to it, but it's also an element of play and just sort of, you know, looking at colour as an entity in its own right. I think what happened for me was when I first started trying to introduce colour into the work, it kind of really baffled me because it was very hard to define. And I was trying to sort of, I guess, not tame it, but I was trying to sort of like, you know, formally understand what would happen. And then after a while, I kind of just realised that you just can't. You know, and it doesn't work like that. It's just it's a totally different thing. It's like trying to control the weather or something. You know, it's just, you have to kind of go with it. And once I kind of changed my approach, once I just accepted that that's what it was and just to go with it and to play with it, then it became much easier.
Making his stripe prints, Ian usually works from left to right, across the surface, selecting colours as he goes. But during lockdown, that changed. He started working from the centre out, mirroring colours left and right. He's created two series of large screen prints with Atelier JI using a new gloss enamel technique. The gloss makes the colours sing, and the mirroring gives them a pulsing heart at their centre.
Got some examples over here.
Absolutely stunning.
From the centre, they're the same as you go out. So, like, you know, starting there's a central line, and then these two colours are the same, and then the next two are the same, and then so on.
But they're not an exact mirror.
They're not exactly, no. They're kind of like, they're poured, you know, they are approximately the same.
The colours are the same.
The colours are the same, and compositionally, they are roughly the same. So, for example, this faint line here, this faint yellow, is replicated over there. This red band is wider. This blue kind of purple band is narrower, but they're not exactly the same, no.
Yeah, and that's the element of chance again coming into it because you pour them from the top. Yeah. Do you still use a syringe?
Sometimes a syringe, sometimes watering can, all sorts of different things. But yeah, syringes are great because you can control the liquid very well. Mm. There's something about these sort of compositions which I just felt were right at the time. I felt I needed something which was much more centred and kind of compositionally grounded. And it just seemed to happen, you know, at the same time as COVID, which was sort of a moment when everyone was like trying to find things to grasp hold of and to ground themselves. So I think it was probably...
Symmetry was your grounding.
Kind of, in a way, yeah. And there was a lot of talk, everyone was sort of saying, oh, I wish I had more time to reflect, or I've had more time to reflect on my life now. And these sort of pieces are kind of, you know, if you folded them in the middle, they do sort of mirror each other. And the first ones I made were very, very perfect. So they were like, it really, really looked exactly the same. And it's kind of quite sort of almost freaky, actually. but I kind of realised I didn't actually need to do that quite as much as I thought. So I sort of kind of loosened up as I went along.
There's something like 38 colours in it.
Yeah, I know, it's wild.
Insane.
And we've also, once I've worked out the format for this, we kind of input different sort of colour combinations and play around with that quite a lot, often using a computer actually, and then sort of they're tweaked at the end by hand.
I wondered if that's how you did it, because you use a painting to start the process, but actually, once you've made the screens, you can change the colours in any way you want.
Absolutely, which in a way, that's fantastic, because it kind of means that you're able to sort of input a template into something digitally, into a computer, and then play around and mess around with the colours. And those colours, in this case, or this particular work, were called pathways. So that became, I was just looking at it thinking, well, that's just a great title for the edition. In fact, that's going to be the title for the show, because I think it's quite, you know, it just seems to sort of be this sort of path I've taken.
It would be virtually impossible for Ian to recreate, say, five of exactly the same compositions in painting and just change the colours around. But with print, he can make a basic underlying composition and then create different colourways, different dynamics, so he can find out how a different composition can work using different colours. And that's the wonderful thing about printmaking. I mean, it's something that other artists have done, like Joseph Albers and his homage to the squares. But for an abstract painter, a gestural painter, you just can't do that in painting, because you can't replicate a splat or a pour, because it will always look slightly different. So with the prints, and especially with the mirrored enamels, where there were five small silk screens and the three large pathway prints, that's exactly what he's done. He's used this underlying composition and then created a whole body of different works. And most people looking at them actually wouldn't realise it's the same composition, because they look so different with the different palettes. And I was in the studio with him last week, and he was saying the wonderful thing is, having done the three pathways, he's seen the red one and he thinks, wow, that's going to make a fantastic painting. I love that palette. I love the dynamic of that. So that's now feeding back into the painting.
So we have one which is yet with the central zip is red with yellow on the outside. This one's black with more coral. This one's white with pink. And then all the colours are so different. It's taken me a while to realise it's the same screen. The wave is the same at the bottom. Exactly. They look totally different.
No, the colour really does change the way that you view them.
You have to look really closely to work that out, because the colour completely changes your reading of them.
You're one of the first people to see them outside of the studio, so I managed to persuade the printer to I stole these two yesterday.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's nice to see them.
There's a sheer visual pleasure in the encounter with Ian's work. And it's something that he unashamedly accepts. I mean, it's something that he wants us to acknowledge and enjoy. And titles of works in this exhibition, you know, such as Tra-la-la, I mean, it might sound flippant. I mean, I think instead what it is a kind of counteraction to an academicization of artwork, you know, and the sort of heavy going nature of much work. Whereas Ian is unashamedly asking us to enjoy a work of art as a visual experience, rather than something that we have to think too hard about.
The splatter paintings are made by Ian standing several feet away from a large sheet of paper, which is pinned upright onto the wall. And then he will load his syringe with different colours and literally fire the syringe at the paper. So there's this wonderful energy to them, which is, you know, the process, which is translated into the actual work. So I suppose in some ways it's very reminiscent of Jackson Pollock, who famously put his canvases flat on the floor and splatted. Ian's putting them upright and firing with a syringe.
You know, sometimes these work, sometimes they don't, but I love the sort of the way that this kind of fades up.
Do you ever think of those Nikki de Saint-Phalle paintings from the 60s? She filled balloons with paint and plastered over them and then shot at the painting. And I like the idea of the chance element.
Yeah.
It's sort of a similar thing, this idea of an explosion of colour.
Yeah.
Yours are, you're much more controlled and the colours are really balanced.
I don't know. No,
but there's that sense of explosion about it.
Yeah,
them.
I think so. And sort of, yeah, physical mark making and sort of layering. No, I love it. It's really great.
Whereas you get the wonderful splats on the paper, you can imagine all around the paper is this wonderful amalgamation of many, many different areas of colour that densely overlaid. It's the accidents around the paper. And Ian's now begun to look at those and say, well, actually, they're quite interesting in their own right. And how can I use those as part of the compositions? With Ian's work, he's always testing ideas, and sometimes accidents lead to other ideas.
So these have... So these have been collecting some of the splatters, and they built up in all these little kind of marks. So
this is thousands and thousands of tiny splatters, reds, oranges, yellows, pinks.
So these are kind of like rain on the floor as I'm kind of painting. They get all these sort of explosive marks and splinters of colour.
And, so this is a byproduct from working on...
Well, kind of a byproduct.
But it's become a work in its own right.
Well, it has, because it's sort of, it's like several different events and it's been turned around and built up and it just has this lovely modulation. In a musical analogy, these are a bit more like my drum solo kind of moments, I think, where I can kind of let rip a bit. So they're great. I love the sort of physicality of them and all these sort of very energetic mark making.
They look like a giant bunch of flowers kind of shaken to bits or fireworks exploding. I mean, they're really explosive in their colour.
Thank you. I mean, the firework analogy is great. In fact, the titles for these often come from firework kind of sort of names, you know, like rockets and bangs and things like that. But yeah, so we're going to have, there's going to be two of these, in fact, these two in the exhibition, and then I'm going to try and make a much bigger one as well.
Gosh. Well, it's all going to look so fantastic.
Thank you. Oh, I hope so. Yeah. No, I think we're nearly there now. Just, I mean, it's great to see these sort of prints. So there's a little bit of tweaking to do on these big screen prints, then they're nearly done.
Fresh proofs from the printer.
Yeah. And then, like I say, it's just the big works on paper. They're all prepared. This has been quite a thing to get paper and to flatten it out. Mm. So they're quite big sheets, these.
But the scale of this is what?
Nearly three metres wide. So looking forward to doing these as well.
A lot of people would look at a piece of abstract art like Ian's or Bridget Riley's and go, my child could have done that. Well, they couldn't. They may have tried, but it's incredibly complex. And it's also 50 years of learning. There was a fascinating exhibition last year at the Burton Gallery. It was a retrospective of Ian's works on paper, his drawings. And it started with his very early life drawings, figurative drawings, right through tracing the arc of his drawing practice to the large-scale recent splats. And what it showed you was that Ian began as a traditional lifeform artist, as many of those professional artists did, but very quickly how he became fascinated by process. He was, you know, before he had his big studio and his financial backing, he was using a watering can to pour the paint. He was throwing paint, splatting it, doing many of the things he's doing now. And he's developing this language, which is developed over 30 years. And it's incredibly complex. But what it also showed you was that actually paper, prints and paper, have been at the core of his practice for actually a long time.
And I think printmaking, you know, for me, it's interesting that, you know, there's lots of different reasons why we make prints, but obviously the two sort of mediums, painting and printmaking, feed into each other. As a collector, I mean, the things that I collected to begin with were prints. You know, I couldn't afford paintings. In fact, I went to Alan to see him to buy a print, and it was a Matisse print. It wasn't particularly expensive, but, you know, it just sort of really occurred to me early on that, you know, if I was doing this, maybe that would be something that other, you know, people would kind of get into, and it was something that I should look at and think about as a sort of another kind of way of showing my work.
But I love the fact that also you could, as a 29, you know, in your 20s, you could afford a print by Matisse in a way that all of us...
£2,000.
So which is a lot of money at the time.
Well, it's a lot of money, but it's like, you know, buying a big sofa. It wasn't that kind of unattainable, you know.
Imagine buying a painting. It's millions and millions.
And there's no way that you could do that. You know, paintings are, you know, much more expensive, and there's a lot more that goes into them in some ways.
I think what I've learned today as well is that although you say there's a lot goes into a painting, actually a lot goes into a print. The only advantage is once you've cracked the print, you can have 30 of them.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they come, you know, you can make additions is fantastic. But I mean, the additioning itself is, you know, these are all handmade things, so it's kind of pretty phenomenal. Yeah. And you know, I mean, when they're doing them, when they're sort of like mixing all the colours and when they're going to make the etchings, you know, you can hear a pin drop in the studio. Like, everyone's really, really super focused because they know that so much work and time has gone into kind of getting it right. Yeah, it's a whole thing. It's very special.
You've been listening to Making a Mark from the Cristea Roberts Gallery, presented by me, Charlotte Mullins. To find out more about Ian Davenport and the work we've been discussing, please visit www.cristearoberts.com.